Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. This is AB Dawji, and this is The Big Picture, broadcasting simultaneously on Radio Islam and Radio Al Ansar. Welcome. Welcome, all you wonderful people out there. And even if you are not a wonderful person, you are also welcome. Ahlan wa sahlan. And how's it and all? Well, no wasting time with vacuous frivolities, whatever that means. This is an educational program, so let's get into our first lesson, children. I am going to ask you some very difficult questions. Very difficult. Don't shout out the answer. Just put up your hands, okay? Right. Are you ready? Here's the first one. What do you call a person from Italy? A citizen of Italy. What do you call him? Wow. Hey, you all seem to know the answer. Eh? In front there, yes, yes. That's right. An Italian. Okay, here's a tough one. What do you call a citizen of America? Yes, correct again. An American. And a person from Egypt? Wow, you are so good, eh? An Egyptian. And here's a very, very difficult one. A person, a citizen of India is called? That's right. An Indian. So, let me ask you this. Most of you listening to this program, how would you identify yourself? Are you African? Are you colored? Or Indian? Did I hear most of you shout out that you are Indian? Really? You are a citizen of India? Ooh. Citizen, or maybe, or are you a citizen of South Africa? So you are a South African citizen and you are a citizen of India. You have dual citizenship? No? Then what are you talking about, Mamu? You were born here and maybe you visited India or maybe you didn't visit at all. Indian means you are a citizen of India. Finish and klar. Hence, you are not an Indian. You are a South African. So, why am I laboring this point? I hear you saying with a very fed up face. It's because of an issue that came up this past week. There is this guy by the name of Glenn Sneeman, a teacher at Grootkraal Primary School in Oudtshoorn in the Western Cape. In 2017, he applied for the job of principal at another school. Now, here's the interesting part. His, and I put this in inverted commas, official identity is colored. But in applying for the job, he put on the CV that he is African. And that's when the poo hit the fan. Almost 3 years later, last month in fact, he was summoned to a disciplinary hearing. And apparently there was a charge against him by the Western Cape Education Department. This is what it said. You committed a common law offense, to wit, fraud, by stating on your CV when applying for the principal post at Fezekile Secondary School that you are an African male, whereas in truth, your records indicate that you are a colored male, and by doing so, gain an advantage for purposes of being shortlisted. Ooh, fraud, eh? He was accused of committing fraud. You are a colored and claim to be an African? Serious stuff, Obut. Serious stuff. Well, it turns out that they picked on the wrong guy. They were trying to clap him, but they were in line to collect some lack of fat smacks and some tight kicks also. Why? Because this Glenn Sneeman is not just some fellow in Tata Machan's category. Listen to this. Snayman is an outspoken critic of race classification and founder of an organization called People Against Race Classification. He is particularly outspoken against the use of the term colored, which he considers degrading. Since 2010, Snayman has led a campaign against the government's continued use of race categories, black, colored, Indian, and white, on official documentation, including job application forms. He also launched a petition which asked people to declare, "I don't regard myself as colored, black, Indian, or white person. I regard myself first and foremost as a South African." Yarr, dear Mensa, you're not going to bang heads with this guy, eh? Eh, Javiet? How's my Afrikaans, eh? Speak like a Paka Breno, eh? So guess what? Guess what? The Western Cape Education Department dropped all charges against him. And that, dear listeners, opened up a whole discussion about identity. Identity. Let me take you back to the days of Steve Biko and the Black Consciousness Movement. At that time, it was declared that the word black included Africans, Indians, and coloreds, meaning all those who were oppressed by the white government. Right, let's fast forward to early 1990s, just before apartheid ended. The discussion was about lifting the lives of black people, improving the lives of black people by such mechanisms as black economic empowerment, that's BEE, and the Equality Act, and so on. One may say that this was racism in reverse. Sorry. Racism in reverse. Blacks were given first preference in the job market in order to uplift them. And there's nothing wrong with that. Nothing wrong with that. But hey, suddenly it seems that blacks didn't necessarily, the word black didn't necessarily mean African, Indians, and coloreds. It favored Africans, giving them first preference. Now, and of course we know about this. Now, here's the interesting part, which I learned with a great deal of surprise yesterday. Remember Trevor Manuel, finance minister under Mandela? I heard him yesterday, well, actually it was on Thursday, on a radio program. He said that in the laws of our country, there is no racial classification. Did you get that? No one is obliged to state a particular identity. You are not obligated by law to say whether you are African, Indian, colored, Khoisan, or any other category. Wow! Hey, I must confess, I never knew that. So Glenn Snayman was perfectly within his rights to call himself an African, as he chose to do so. If I remember correctly, Trevor Manuel said that we self-identify, meaning that people decide by themselves to identify themselves as African or white or colored, etc. There's no law, as I said, that forces you to do so. Self-identify, no obligation. So if somebody comes up to you and say, okay, which category are you? You say, I'm South African. Finish. Right? Or whatever you choose. Right. So when I heard that, it got me thinking. From now onwards, I'm going to classify myself as a Vito. Okay? Glenn says that he's an African, so why can't I identify myself as a Vito, eh? But wait, maybe it's not such a good idea after all. Firstly, the problem is that Africans are given preference over whites in the job market, you know, with the BEE and all that. And there is rising anti-white racism. Secondly, and more importantly, I can't regard myself as a widow because, I'm sort of a bit tanned. Quite a bit, actually. Let me put it another way. What does a woman look for in a man? Well, the general requirement is that he should be tall, dark, and handsome, as the saying goes. Well, let me say that I have one of these three qualities. Dark. Not bad, eh? At least one-third of what attracts a female. But I'm also thinking that we should shed the title Indian. I've been thinking about this. We should shed the title Indian. We are not citizens of India. Maybe we should look for a new designation, some new name, new title. Do you have any ideas out there? Any ideas? Look, we like Tarkari, okay? We like Tarkari. So how about we call ourselves Tarkarias? Tarkarias. No, I actually don't think that will do. Somewhere in that word is a racist note, the hidden there. Tarkarias. I won't explain that. In any case, these days, the new generation is moving away from traditional Indian dishes. I have yet to visit a young couple. You know, I'm talking about Tarkari now, right? Young people are moving away from traditional dishes. And I have yet to visit a young couple's home and be served papri mutyas, or maybe paya, or bindi in keema. Ish! They are only into pastas and kastas and sushi and pizza and stuff like that. So, Tarkarias won't work. Okay, send me your ideas and there will be prizes to be won. Hey, I remember this from many, many, many years ago, offering this prize on another radio station, many years ago. Right. So the person who gets the best names as an alternative for Indian, the first prize is 1 week holiday in Colenso. And the second prize is 2 weeks holiday in Colenso. Hey, I just thought of a good one, eh? How is it if we call ourselves Ghibais? We like ghee in our chow, right? Ghibais. Not bad, eh? And we could have our own theme song. Hello, is it ghee you're looking for? I don't know what I think about it. Maybe I should just follow the lead set by Glenn and call myself an African. But, dear listeners, what is an African? Who is an African? I was born in Africa, so therefore I'm an African. Correct? Yes, as this whole racial identity thing is clearly not in black and white. Not in black and white. Okay, let's get serious now, right? Every day we learn new things about the virus that has gripped the country. Anyway, by the way, I just remembered yesterday I was reading that in France, in one day, in a 24-hour period, they had 14,000 infections. How many? 14,000 infections in one day. I don't know what it's like in Spain or in the U.S., but I just came across in the Guardian newspaper and I thought, let me just remember, 14,000. Right, so as I said, every day we learn new things about the virus that has gripped the country. No, silly, not the coronavirus, the Chorwan virus. Shocking testimony at the Zondo Commission where top politicians regarded the country's resources and the tax revenue as their own piggy bank. By the way, is it allowed for Muslim kids to own a piggy bank to save their coins? I'll have to check with Maulana Rawat about that. Maybe there's a business opportunity here for an enterprising young person. Make nice cow or goat-shaped money boxes. Hey, speaking about cows, here's some breaking news. And it is from a reputable website of India, and that's NDTV. Here's what it says. Rashtriya Kamdenu Ayog company chairman Vallabhbhai Kathiria unveiled, in inverted commas, a chip made out of cow dung and claimed that it reduces radiation from mobile phones and it will be a safeguard against diseases. Wow. Speaking at the launch of a nationwide campaign, Kamdenu Deepavali Abhiyan, which is aimed at promoting cow dung products, Vallabhbhai Kathiria said, cow dung will protect everyone. It is anti-radiation. It is scientifically proven. This is a radiation chip that can be used in mobile phones to reduce radiation. It will be safeguarded against diseases. Dear people, maybe the science behind this claim is genuine, but personally, I think it's talking sheer nonsense, eh? Now, how did I get to the subject of cows? Hey, you know what? You people like to distract me, eh? So, where was I? Yes, about this wholesale looting that's being exposed at the Zondo Commission. State capture. State tenders. Yeah, the word tenders has got the Chorwans shivering in their pants. Even though I myself am an innocent, I find it hard to use the word. I went to the butcher in Overport and asked the assistant, please give me a kilo of steak that's been made nice and soft. He said, boss, what kind of steak? I said, you know, you put it through the machine and it comes out, it's not tough anymore. And he said very loudly, answered me very loudly, ah, boss, you mean tenderized steak? Yes, I could have died there, tenderized. Don't like to hear that word. But maybe that's a new way to describe some of the big shot Chorwan. Instead of saying corrupt politician, we should say tenderized politicians. Hey, how's that? Tenderized politicians. Anyway, we've heard about the two factions within the ANC. It's a battle for power, we've heard. Well, it looks like the war is out in the open. Out in the open. On the one side, we have Fikile Mbalula. I get this a tongue twister for me at every time. Mbalula. Fikile Mbalula. And on the other, Ace Magashule. The insults are flying on Twitter. And you know what? I like it, as my friend Idris Kamisa would say. I like it. You know, I said it before. I'd be very happy if the ANC splits into two. The African National Congress and the African National Chorwans. How's that? ANC, the African National Congress, and the other group will be called the African National Chorwans. It's the old cliche, power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely. This huge party, juggernaut it is, a huge party, with about 60% of the vote. It just did almost as it pleased, running roughshod with no threat of losing power. But if it split, and it became two smaller parties, and we had a number of small parties, then this will be a truly vibrant democracy where If you don't deliver, the people could vote you out. Competition is good. And in support of the ACE faction, we had MK, that is Mkhonto we see, where veterans group marching in Durban to, in their words, protect the revolution. I'm not sure what that means. But the main message was that Minister Fikile Mbalula messed up PRASA, that is the passenger rail service of South Africa. If I remember the story correctly, it appears that Mbalula quite legitimately removed a security company from guarding the railways and therefore vandals, stole all kinds of things. Mbalula said that these security companies were run by the leaders of the MK veterans and money went into their pockets. That's what he claimed. The plot, Habibi, thickens. I was looking at this march of the MK veterans. Some looked quite young. They must have been about 3 years old when they fought the apartheid army in Angola years ago. South Africa is such a funny place, right? The MK veteran says that Mbalula must go because he is incompetent. Mbalula must go because he is incompetent. Wow, wow. Hey. Isn't that incredible? Incompetent. If these MK guys had to investigate all the people in the government, they would find so many of these types who are incompetent. And then they will have to march every single day in protest at each one of these useless characters, this incompetent character. Every day they'll have to march. Boots will get worn out. And so there was another big demonstration also. And of course, the whole country knows about this. Big demonstration. It was in Senegal yesterday. Senegal. As you know, two guys were in court for a bail hearing for the alleged murder of a young Afrikaner farmer. And you know that when these two guys appeared in court last week, a group of Afrikaner farmers stoned the court. There was mayhem, chaos, and a police van was set on fire. Of course, this was totally wrong. Wrong. And the claim was that the police was reluctant to take action against white people. I did all over the place on all radio stations that the police was reluctant to take action against white people because they are scared of white people. And that, in fact, if blacks acted in that way, they would face rubber bullets, tear gas, and maybe even live ammunition. Well, I've been thinking about this claim, and two things came up. Firstly, the police at that court, the police were not expecting such a strong response from this group of whites who were armed. And so it would have been extremely foolish for the police to act, given that the level of anger amongst these Afrikaner farmers about farm killings was very high indeed. So that is why the police did not act. That's my view. Secondly, we know very well that many groups of black people have burnt buildings and buses. I think there was something at the university in Westville. I think one of the residences was burnt. Well, we know very well that many groups of black people have burnt buildings and buses and so on. And sometimes the police did intervene. And sometimes they just stood idly by without responding. We know this. So the argument that police acted in a biased manner is unfounded. The police knew well in advance that the, for example, yesterday, the police knew well in advance that the appearance of the alleged killers in court yesterday could turn out to be explosive. The EFF said it will be there. It said that, well, early in the week, that it will be there. And the Afrikaner farmer said that they would also be there. So the police was well prepared, not only to keep the two sides apart and also to protect state property, and therefore was going to be present in huge numbers. Let me know, Becky Kele was there also. The EFF announced that it was going there to support the two... It was not going there to support the two alleged killers. But in its words, it was to protect state property. But wait a minute. If the police was already going to be present in very large numbers, what does it mean when you say the EFF will go to protect state property? Obviously, it's just a poor excuse to confront the white farmers. How were they protecting state property by doing a war dance and shouting, kill the farmer, kill the Boer? Let me tell you what's my view. The EFF will pick only on some particular incident or issue that relates to discord between blacks and whites. Let me repeat that. The EFF will pick only on some particular incident or issue that relates to discord between blacks and whites. Now follow me carefully here. The ANC Youth League, in fact, for a change, put it perfectly well. They described EFF actions as political opportunism. Let me give you an example. The Clicks advert, apparently saying that white hair is better than black hair. The EFF went to town. Clicks must close for a week. Ground forces were called to attack. Click stores were under siege. The temperature was turned up to a boiling point. The white company was insulting blacks. Well, in the end, it turned out that it was not an advert devised by Clicks. It was from a hair products company, Tresemme. And a few blacks and whites at that company okayed the ad. They sat and saw the ad and said, it's fine. And it was put up by an advertising agency. Clicks itself, its directors and so on, as would any sensible person. So Clicks was appalled at the advert. They were appalled at the advert and pulled it down immediately. So things were not in black and white. In fact, it emerged that Clicks had blacks in very high places in management and even contributed generously to black advancement. So, clearly, the demonstration against Clicks was unwarranted. But no. The EFF gained mileage out of it by being viewed as standing up for the dignity of black people. Mileage means more support. And here again in Senegal, the message was that we, the EFF, are standing up against the white racists. That was what Malema said continuously in his speech. Gave a long speech. Nothing about protecting state property. And you know what? Let me be honest. I must hand it to him. His speech was very powerful. He's a great orator. Yeah, he's a great orator. And in history, we have witnessed great, fiery orators who rallied the people work them up into a frenzy. And Malema, himself, he touched on many things, not just what was happening. Even about the EFF giving sanitary pads with together with EFF T-shirts free of charge. That's what the new campaign is going to be. But his main focus was land and the coded message. It's called a dog whistle. A message, you know, the term dog whistle means that when you blow a whistle, the human ear cannot hear it. Only dogs can hear it. So this is a coded message. And sometimes a clear message that he sent was, we want our land. What's this nonsense that white farmers can produce our food? We must occupy the land and produce our own food. And so he went on saying, these farmers are enslaving the blacks who work for them. That was sort of the underlying theme of his speech. Let us take the land and all that goes with it. This is his actual words I heard. And all that goes with it. He says, don't listen to Ramaphosa and Bheki Cele and Nelson Mandela and all of them. That we must be nice to these racist farmers. You know what? I find such talk to be very alarming. Because it is, as I said, a dog whistle for instability and anarchy and chaos. It echoes the words of Robert Mugabe, another great orator. He was a great orator. And look what happened there. A clear lesson of how not to do things. But you know what? A politician needs support, he needs votes, and will play on the sentiments, the emotions of the people to get them. Political opportunism. Because if the EFF was genuine, now listen to me carefully, because if the EFF was genuine in its concern for the black people of this country, it wouldn't just make a huge hoo-ha about a relatively insignificant thing like the Clicks advert, which people felt was hurtful to black dignity, or protest against a small group of farmers who burnt a van. No. If they were morally driven and strongly inspired to fight for black people, they would go for the biggest crime against black people. And what's that? Corruption. The looting of money that could be used to uplift black people, create jobs, improve education, and so on. What was it? About a trillion stolen in so far as we know in state capture. If the EFF was really serious, sincere and committed to protecting state resources so that black people could benefit, they would have marched to the VBS bank and demand to know who stole the 2 billion rands. Corruption is a far bigger monster destroying black people than an advert for hair products. So why does the EFF not march against corruption? Let me repeat that. So why does the EFF not march against the greatest crime, and it is corruption, instead of marching against white farmers who burnt a van? I leave that to my erudite listeners to answer that question. Political opportunism equals hypocrisy. And about this whole issue of taking over land, or as we've been hearing for years, expropriation without compensation. Over and over we've been hearing. Expropriation without... The message was that land will be taken over willy-nilly and no payment will be made to the owners. That's what it seemed. And I'm sure that many farmers, especially farmers especially, were very nervous at this prospect. So, in fact, I was pleasantly surprised by a new bill that's just been introduced by the Minister of Public Works and Infrastructure, Patricia de Lille. It's the amended bill of 2020, and it spells out things clearly that the expropriation will be done in an orderly manner. And it's, you know, I don't want to go into the details. I also heard Patricia on radio, and it was clear that there would not be any willy-nilly arbitrary confiscation of land. Land that the state owns will be distributed. Land that farmers have not been used, vast tracts of land that haven't been used for a very long time, will be taken. And compensation will be paid in some instances. And still, if the farmer is not satisfied with the payment, he can ask the courts to decide, and so on. Very orderly and sensible. Not the Robert Mugabe model at all. And you know what? That, you know what that particular model did, the Robert Mugabe model, you know what that did? Listen to this. The farms were taken under a controversial land reform program launched by the former President Robert Mugabe. He argued that this was to to redress colonial-era land grabs when much of the country's best land was reserved for the white population and black farmers were forced into marginal areas. Under the program, most of the country's 4,000 white farmers then the backbone of Zimbabwe's agricultural economy were forced from their land, which was handed over to about a million black Zimbabweans. And of course, you know what happened after that. Zimbabwe became a basket case. People are starving. Thousands crossed into South Africa hoping for a better life, hoping to feed themselves, actually. Okay, here's a question. Guess what is the name of Zimbabwe's Minister of Land and Agriculture? I bet you none of you out there know the name of Zimbabwe's Minister of Land and Agriculture. Anyone? No? No hands up there, I see. His name is Anxious Mazuka. Anxious Mazuka. I kid you not. His name is Anxious Mazuka. I wonder why or how he got that name. Maybe he was born after 10 or 11 months and the parents were worried when he will emerge. So they called him Anxious Mazuka. Well, it seems that Anxious is really concerned about the white farmers coming back. To Zimbabwe. Zimbabwe has announced that white farmers in Zimbabwe will be compensated $3.5 billion. I don't know where they're going to get the money from. $3.5 billion. Just multiply that by 16.5 and you'll get the rands. $3.5 billion. To start again, and those who left the country will be given their farms back, and blacks who occupied these lands will be offered alternative land elsewhere. That's what the statement is, alternative land. So basically the whole Mugabe project is being reversed. Minister Anxious Mazuka must be anxious for the plan to work so that Zimbabwe can get back on its feet again. So this rabble-rousing by the EFF about land is, in my view, dangerous politicking, which means get the votes by any means and stuff the consequences. And, you know, if it really happens that white farmers are chased off the land, then you will have a new level of corruption, as happened in Zimbabwe. Mugabe's chomis got the best farms and then let it go to ruin. just as the Estina Dairy Farm and the VBS Bank promised to uplift blacks, but was looted bone dry. Well, all I can say is, in the end, Habibi, all I can say is that I don't own a farm, and I don't want to be a veto, eh? Okay, right, okay. We've run out of time. Let's see what I got for you from the light at the end of the tunnel graveyard. And you have to pretend you didn't hear this before, and I expect you to laugh very loudly. I read in this morning's newspaper, with slight modifications, and you've got to be very sharp for this one, okay? Cyril Ramaphosa returns from a trip to the Far East. He lands in Joburg. He gets onto his helicopter, flies up to the Union Building. He gets out of his helicopter at the Union Buildings in Pretoria. And he is leading two small donkeys into the building. The chief security officer springs to attention and salutes and says, "Nice donkeys, sir." And the president says, "These are not donkeys. They are authentic Mongolian mules. I got one for the Minister of Education and the other one for the Minister of Police." And the guard salutes again and says, "Excellent, excellent swap, Mr. President. Excellent swap." Right. I think we've got a minute. Look into the grave. Let me dig up something here very quickly. Gulambai from Mirbank heard that his uncle Mukhtar was very sick. He had gastric flu and was admitted to the R.K. Khan Hospital. Gulambai went to visit his uncle. When he came into the ward, he found his uncle fast asleep. So he sat next to the bed and waited and waited and waited in case his uncle woke up. And there was a bowl of peanuts on the table next to the bed. Gulambai took a few and he ate them. After a few minutes, he took another handful. You know how it is with peanuts. Once you start, you can't stop. He took a few more. After a while, all the peanuts were finished. Uncle Mukhtar was still sleeping when visiting hours were over, so Gulambai left, but he was feeling guilty that he ate all the peanuts. So next day, he bought a packet of peanuts and went to visit Uncle Mukhtar. Uncle Mukhtar was awake, and Gulambai spoke to him, asked him how he was feeling and all, and then opened the packet and filled the bowl with peanuts. Uncle Mukhtar asked him why he was doing that, and Gulambai was very embarrassed to speak the truth. So he said, "You know, yesterday I saw the nurses taking the bowl and throwing the peanuts away." Uncle Mukhtar said, "Hey man, you shouldn't have worried to buy the peanuts. My son Ibrahim buys me the chocolate-covered peanuts every day, but I left my false teeth at home. So I just sucked the chocolates off and spit the peanuts into the bowl." This is Abi Dawji bidding you all. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.